Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. We tried for weeks here to arrange a debate between the 3 leading Republican candidates for the U.S. Senate in Missouri, but we could only get 2 of them to agree to take part. Those 2 are Sarah Steelman and Todd Akin. John Bruner never provided the time when he could appear, despite repeated requests. So today we forge on anyway with 2 of the 3. The winner of Tuesday's primary goes up against Democratic incumbent Claire McCaskill in November. Well, let me begin with you 2 here. There are 2 words I haven't heard in the course of this campaign during this record-setting summer, and those words are global warming. What needs to be done to combat it, and how high of a priority should it be? Sarah, let me begin with you.
Well, you know, I think we should be talking about the drought, personally, because that has more bearing on what's happening to real people in this country right now, and that mainly farmers. Who are losing their crops, their corn crops and their soybean crops, and cattle farmers who are experiencing such high feed prices that they can't feed their herds and they're having to reduce them. So it seems to me that that is a much higher priority than talking about global warming, which really hasn't been proved. And I don't think the government should get involved in setting policies on global warming when there's no proof of it yet.
Well, Sarah, a lot of folks might say, though, that the drought we're experiencing in Missouri this summer is a direct result of global warming and that you've got to address the root cause or we're going to be seeing extended summers of droughts in Missouri for years to come.
Well, I'm sorry, Steve, but I just disagree with you. The science doesn't support that. And if you can show me the proof of that, then maybe we can have this discussion. But to me, it seems much more important to talk about something that is directly affecting farmers today and what can be done to help them.
So the notion that the world might be experiencing global warming, you aren't buying it.
I don't think it's been true. I don't think that the science supports it.
Congressman Akin, where do you stand on this whole question of global warming?
Well, I'm less skeptical than Sarah, and I just say I don't believe it at all. Okay, I think she's right. I think that even the people who were giving the argument about global warming wouldn't say that a particular summer like this was global warming. They because they're talking about something that happens over thousands and thousands of years. This is just one of the variations of weather, probably one of the hottest, driest spots we've seen in many, many years. Certainly, I don't remember anything like it. I've lived in Missouri for a long time. So this is a drought. It's causing tremendous hardship and difficulties. But to say it's global warming, and I think for an awful lot of people, when the scientists in East Anglia turned out they were fudging the data to try to prove global warming, and that they didn't believe it enough themselves that they were going to fudge the data on it, I just don't really believe in the whole theory of global warming. The mechanism and the logic of how it works, I think the premises are flawed. The idea is that, of course, that CO2 plays a disproportionate influence on how water vapor affects the temperature, and because of that, supposedly then CO2 is this huge driver in terms of temperature. I just don't think the evidence is good there from a scientific point of view, Steve.
Let's turn to a different topic, and Congressman, I'll begin with you here. Help a voter out. A lot of voters, you know, out there are struggling with how to pick among the 3 of you. The polls I'm seeing, 20% to 25% of Republicans across Missouri still undecided in this U.S. Senate primary race here. What would you say to them, Congressman, to help them figure this thing out?
Well, I believe that the job of each of us as candidates is to put our best foot forward, and I believe the thing that's unique that I have to offer is the fact that I have a principle-driven conservative record. That is, that I've put principle over politics, voting against my own party at various times, trying to do just the right thing. Now, I acknowledge that my understanding of that is that I've been a conservative. I've been that way for a long time, and I believe that a proven conservative record is better than gambling on talk and promises. And so I believe that because I have been in Congress, have taken the tough votes, and any time, Steve, that you take these hard votes, there's always a cost. For instance, my first vote as a brand-new congressman. We had a brand-new president. One of the bills is No Child Left Behind. I'm the only congressman in Missouri who voted against No Child Left Behind. Now, 12 years later, people say that's a pretty terrible bill. But that's not the way to make friends and influence enemies, to vote against your own president on the very first vote out of the chute. So it's one thing to say you're a conservative. It's another thing to have that proven record, and particularly to have voted about exactly opposite of Claire McCaskill. So I think that's what I have to offer, is the fact that I am a proven conservative. I've paid the price for that, and I'm rated by many standards the most conservative congressman in the state of Missouri.
And Congressman, I've noticed this too, in your both in your TV ads and in your stump speeches to various groups of Republicans, you aren't hesitant at all to invoke your own personal faith in your statements to potential supporters. Tell us about that.
I have talked about faith in the context of the founding of our country, and the fact that America, no matter who you are, you look at it, it's a very unique nation. So I think it's a legitimate and a very interesting question to say, how do we get this way? Because there's been lots of nations in history, and what are the assumptions that the founders made? And I usually call back the idea in the Declaration that our Creator blessed us with life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And so I like to talk about who we are as a nation and the founding ideas that it's founded on, because as an engineer, I believe those ideas are tremendously important to us in the future. And so the idea that the job of the government is to protect life and to protect people's liberty, liberty, of course, in being able to speak as we choose and to own what we earn, and the pursuit of happiness, which is a really a beautiful way of describing freedom, the idea that each of us has been given different gifts and we can look around in the world and decide, what do we want to work on? And we get to choose some goal for ourselves and go for it. And so the pursuit of happiness. So I like to put that in the context of who we are as a nation, because, Steve, I feel like right now there's a lot of negativism, particularly in another gentleman's campaign ads and everything. And I think Americans want to be, they don't need to be convinced that we got problems. What they want to see is somebody that's willing to talk positively, say, here's who we are, here's what we need to be. And that's what we've tried to do, is to set a positive tone for what we've been doing in the campaign.
Sarah Stillman, let me come back to you with my original question. You know, help a voter out. A lot of folks out there are struggling with how to choose among the three of you. What would you say to them?
Well, I am a fiscal conservative. My background is, of course, in economics. I was state treasurer and have a lot of good experience in the public sector and experience in the private sector as well. I didn't even run for office till I was 40 years old. And I'm also the mother of three young men, and I think all of those things contribute to making good decisions. And you know, here's what I've been talking about throughout my whole campaign, and I've tried to be very proactive and make sure voters know who I am and what I think needs to be done in Washington. And the things that I've been talking about are making sure that we have a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, and that we cap the size of government, and that we stop spending money that we don't have, because we're simply running the country into a ditch similar to that of Europe. Now, I am a person that has stood up to my own party many times, despite the political consequences. And I have been very proactive at what I've done in office as well. For example, when I was state treasurer, as you probably know, I started the first tariff-free fund in the country and cut off tax money that was being invested in companies that do business with state sponsors of terrorism. Mm-hmm. That was back in 2005. Now, you know, here in 2012, we're still talking about the sanctions against Iran, but I was doing what I could as state treasurer back then, and now 23 other states have followed us. But that's the kind of proactive leadership that we need in Washington. And, you know, with all due respect to Congressman Aiken, and he and I have gotten to know each other quite well along the campaign trail. I really like him. But he's been there for 12 years, and, you know, he talks about how we should cut this or cut that, but he hadn't really done that, and he's still supporting earmarks. I don't support earmarks because I don't think any serious conservative can support that process of earmarking and still cut government spending. John Bruner from St. Louis has done nothing but attack me and Congressman Aiken this whole time. I mean, he hasn't put forth anything that he really believes in or that he wants to do. So I would say the contrast is pretty clear. If voters want somebody who's going to stand up and fight for what is right and put their interests first and get this country headed in a new direction, not the direction it's been headed for the last 12 years, I think that I'm the person that they should vote for. I think that's some of the main differences between the three of us.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're conducting a debate between two of the three leading Republican candidates for the U.S. Senate, St. Louis area Congressman Todd Aiken and former state treasurer Sarah Steelman. St. Louis businessman John Bruner, the third candidate who is leading the pack here, could not join us today. Let me ask Congressman Aiken, I'll come to you. Would you ever agree to raise taxes, even as part of a bipartisan compromise, to lower the national budget deficit?
Well, I think that raising taxes just from a pure economic theory point of view right now is a very, very dangerous thing to do. We're moving from a recession into a depression because of policies that we have seen implemented over the last 3 years. And if you increase taxes at this point, what that does is it's going to pull more money out of the small businesses and private sector. When you do that, it's going to further destroy jobs, and it's going to just weaken the economy even more. So I really don't think it's not a matter of compromising or solving a problem. What I'm saying is that increasing taxes makes the problem worse. And I believe that the only real solution to the economic condition we're in is twofold. One, you have to reduce government spending very significantly. And two, you have to get the private sector going again, because when the private sector is going strong, it generates much, much more tax revenue. In other words, I'm saying if you increase taxes, you very well may reduce the amount of revenue. It seems a little bit backwards, mm-hmm. Steve, to explain that, but if you think about it, you can drive the tax so hard that it slows the economy down, then the businesses don't pay the taxes, the individuals don't have jobs. If you don't have a job, you don't pay as much taxes. And that's what we saw JFK cut taxes, mm-hmm. and the revenue of the government went up. Ronald Reagan did the same thing. Bush did it, and as I recall, it was beginning of 2003. We cut taxes, and the next about 4 years, the revenues that the federal government received went up, even though we'd cut taxes. So, Steve, I don't agree. I understand that we got a terrible problem with the overspending, and one way is to try to get more revenue, but I don't think you could drive the taxes anymore without just doing more damage to the economy.
Sarah Steelman, would you ever agree to raise taxes even as part of a bipartisan compromise to lower the national budget deficit?
No. I think we need to cut government spending. And I think that the way you solve this problem is that you cut government spending, you work towards a balanced budget, and let me just say as an aside, I balanced the budget in 5 years by freezing 2008 levels of spending, except for veterans benefits and military. And so it is achievable, in the near term, not sometime off in the future. Historically, when Congress raises taxes, they end up spending more than they take in. This is a proven economic fact that since World War II, every time Congress raised taxes for every dollar they spent, a dollar they raised the tax, they spent about $1.05 to $1.85 more than what they took in. And so, one, I'm for smaller government. It's too big. Two, I don't think it'll achieve the purpose because Congress just ends up spending it. And three, it would be terrible for the economy right now for mm-hmm. any kind of tax increase on businesses. I mean, this is part of the whole problem with Obamacare. Why do we not have any job creation or very little job creation in the economy today? Why is it stagnant? All of these things are contributing to small businesses deciding that they're not going to expand their business right now. There's too much uncertainty about the future, and that includes, you know, the proposals by this administration to raise taxes, and it includes Obamacare, too. So it would be absolutely the worst thing to do.
Sarah, how about this? How much responsibility does President George W. Bush bear for the breakdown in the American economy the last few years?
Well, I personally think that that there was too much government spending through the decade of the Bush years, and when Congressman Akin was in the Republican majority. I think they let it get out of hand. And this is, you know, that is part of the equation that has gotten us into the trouble we're in when you start spending money that you don't have. But it does no good to, you know, point fingers at whoever it may be. The fact is, how do we fix this thing? And I think the way we fix it is just begin cutting government programs. I have a proposal that, you know, I think we should approach budgeting from a whole new perspective, because, frankly, the way Washington does it is broken. Whether it's Republicans or Democrats, it's broken.
And I think you'd start over again from scratch.
Let's do a zero-based budgeting approach.
That's starting over from scratch, right?
Well, it is. You might have to phase it in over a period of several years, but there's a reasonable way to do it and get at every single program, because we know there's waste in government. We know there's duplication in programs. We know that a lot of this could be turned back over to state and local governments and administered much more efficiently and effectively. So Congress needs to go in and do the hard work of starting at zero and getting through those programs and eliminating the ones that we don't need anymore and that we can't afford. It's like any family, and I'm sure you've done this, I know your listeners have, is when you're overextended, you stop and you take stock of where you are and where you want to be and how you're going to get there. And that's really what needs to happen in Washington.
Congressman Akin, how much responsibility do you place at the feet of President George W. Bush for the breakdown of the American economy?
Well, now, I would say, first of all, that I agree that under the Bush years, we spent too much money in general. However, let's put it into perspective. Bush's very worst year out of 8 years was about a $450 billion deficit. Obama started right off the bat with about $1.5 trillion, or three times worse, been running over $1 trillion every year for the last 3 years. So we're talking 2 to 3 times worse under Obama. So let's.
But arguably, he was trying to bail out the Bush economy, though, arguably.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it. One of the biggest things that was very destructive to the economy was the mortgage crisis. And mortgage crisis came about through practices of Freddie and Fannie. Now, a lot of people don't know it, and it's nice to try to blame everything from hurricanes to everything else on President Bush. But if you take a look in the New York Times, September 11th, 2003, you find an article where George Bush is saying, "I need more authority to control Freddie and Fannie because they're about to blow things up with the home mortgage crisis." So they saw this thing coming years before it happened. We passed a bill in Congress, that is Republicans, to give him the authority to try to control Freddie and Fannie's loan practices. It went to the Senate, and although the Republicans had the majority, we never had 60 votes. Not even a few Democrats would cross over the aisle and deal what later blew up to be a massive world economic hit because Freddie and Fannie were out of control. In the meantime, Freddie and Fannie has their lobbyists running around giving huge amounts of money to Democrat senators and all. So I think it's nice to blame stuff on President Bush, but the fact of the matter is they saw the Freddie and Fannie crisis coming. Now Sarah wants to blame me for what happened in those years. She might remember, though, that I'm the guy that voted no against the $700 billion Wall Street bailout. I was voting no on that. And I voted against the Medicare Part D expansion because it was too much money. So you can't blame everybody there for what happened. A number of us were solid conservatives. We took the right votes, and I still stand by those votes.
You know, and with all due respect to Congressman Aiken, I mean, he's voted to raise the debt ceiling while he was in office four times. And the example he gave, and I believe he gave this example to you, Steve, in an interview that you did with him, is when his vote could have made the difference on Medicare Part D, he voted to move it on to the Senate. And then he switched his vote and voted against it. So it's the typical Washington thing to do, which is to vote both sides of an issue and then claim that you've done the right thing.
Well, sir, you'd vote against the extension of the debt ceiling?
Yes, I would vote against the extension of the debt ceiling until we start cutting government spending. We cannot afford to continue to spend money we don't have. In Missouri, we have a constitutional amendment that says you have to balance the budget every year, and we do that. And we actually keep our AAA rating because we have a prudent way of financing government and making sure that we make ends meet.
I wonder if the two of you could just take a few seconds and tick off three or four things you would do to cut the federal budget in a substantial way. I'm looking for big, meaty ideas here. Congressman Aiken, why don't you start with that?
Well, okay. I think the first thing is you can't do it by sort of going after waste, fraud, and abuse. You have to do meaty things. I think essentially redesigning how Medicaid is done and parceling that back to the states saves you some big money. I, of course, would get rid of the Department of Education. That's a block of money. And I would probably take a very good look at getting rid of most of the Department of Energy, probably put the nuclear things back in the Department of Defense. And the EPA needs to be gone over very thoroughly, maybe even kind of reconstituted in a totally different form. So there's some major things that we've got to do. Now, Steve, I've had been sort of attacked on a couple of different fronts here. And the thing is that when you take a look at the debt ceiling, you need to look at the context of the particular situation. I voted for an increase in the debt ceiling, but we were still pulling bodies out of the rubble after September 11th. And we were just getting ready to get into a couple of wars, and the economy was in bad shape, and we had been close to a balanced budget there within a year or two of it, we believed. Now take a look at where we are today. No budget for 1,000 days, and $1 trillion deficits is a very, very different proposition now, and that's why in the last number of years I voted against a debt ceiling. So it depends on where you are. It's not one of these nice put it in a box. It is either black or white, and I'm always going to vote against it or for it. There are very significant consequences of not voting for the debt ceiling. I believe that in the recent years, the economy is under such stress that it was time to blow the whistle and stop the train. But certainly I didn't believe that right after September 11th. And so that's one of the things. But to your question, those are all major things that need to be looked at.
But Congressman, and, if you threw Medicaid back to the states and had states pick up the tab on that, arguably, again, you would cause all kinds of fiscal havoc at the state level. You'd have a revolt by 50 governors on your hands if you did that.
Well, no, what I'm talking about is that the funding, you might be able to reduce the funding some, but get the program back under the control of the governors, because we believe they can manage it a whole lot more efficiently and better than the federal government does, okay? So I'm not saying just dump it on them and don't give them any money to work the program. I think you misunderstood
okay.
what I meant.
I got you.
But I do think there's a lot of efficiency. Medicaid administered by the federal government is really, really very, very hard thing for them to manage well.
Hmm.
So that's what I was suggesting, not basically dumping
yeah.
all of the finances, because all you're doing is taking money from one pocket, you know, doing it to the other that way. So
sure.
that's now the other thing too on debt ceiling that was really amusing, and that was, you know, I've been beat up because I vote for a debt ceiling increase in 2011, and oh well, that's terrible. Well, got to understand, the one I voted for
mm-hmm.
had a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and one of our dear competitors here was beating me up with negative ads on that, and then he gets on a radio program out in St. Louis and says, oh, I would have voted for that. So he's voting for something he was beating me up for voting for.
Right.
So But these things, you have to take a look at each particular situation, analyze it, and try to do the right thing. And that's what I have a long record, and that's why I'm rated the most conservative congressman in the state of Missouri.
Sarah Stillman, you'd cut what?
Well, I'd start with repealing Obamacare, and that's going to save $1 trillion right off the bat.
Well, the CBO just came out and said it actually reduces the budget deficit. Obamacare does.
Yeah, well, I don't believe that.
It's the CBO, Sarah.
Before the CBO said it was going to cost $1 trillion, too. I mean,
well,
you know, just because the CBO says something doesn't mean the economic model doesn't change. I mean, I know a little bit about this, Steve.
But that's the most respected source we have for nonpartisan information.
So I would also add to that programs like Cylindro, $500 billion. Those kind of programs could be cut. I mean, people look at those and think, why are they getting that money?
Mm-hmm.
That's not fair. Where, you know, Main Street, here, right down here in Neosho, where I am tonight, I seriously doubt if any of those small businesses got any kind of deal like that from the government. I do think we need to look at foreign aid cuts. I think people in Missouri resent the fact that we're sending money to China while borrowing it. I mean, I don't think that's right.
But that won't get you real far in the budget, though.
You could say that for every single thing, and then you never have any cuts. I mean, as I said before, I think we need to go through and start with a zero-based approach to this and say, hey, what works, what doesn't work, what's duplicative, what's wasteful, what could be better administered at the state and local level, and what is unconstitutional.
Maybe a final question. Iran is said to have nuclear ambitions. What should we do about that? Sarah Stillman, why don't you start there?
Well, as I've said before, I mean, I think we have to be kind of approach it in four different ways. One, I think we need to be prepared militarily to take action. I don't think we need to do that until the time calls for it, but certainly we need to be prepared to do that, and we need to help Israel be prepared to protect themselves as a nation. But we also need to make sure that we have sanctions against them, which, of course, I talked about before. In 2005, I was doing that, and, you know, they've accelerated the sanctions over the period of time from 2005 to 2012, but I think we need to keep those on and make sure that other countries are abiding by the U.N. sanctions as well. Secondly, I do think we also need to be in there helping what freedom fighters exist in Iran. So there needs to be covert operations and intelligence to help people, you know, as in the Green Revolution that wanted to overthrow Ahmadinejad, and have that going on as well. But I frankly don't think we should be sitting down with talks with them anymore, period. We're just getting jerked around by them. And I think it needs to stop.
Congressman Aiken, sanctions, helping the freedom fighters, is that going to be enough in your view, or what would you do?
Well, the first thing, and this is a little bit looking out the back window, but we've had 3 years of a dysfunctional international policy by our current president. We've kicked our friends in the teeth and befriended our enemies. We've apologized for our country. And I think that weakness and a vacillating policy has made this situation worse. That said, I believe that we need to take strong action to make sure that nuclear weapons don't fall into the hands of terrorists. That's a very, very bad combination, nuclear weapons and terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
That spells a lot of trouble for people, and I'm willing to take very strong action to try to prevent that from happening. And so I would say those two things. Obviously, you try the peaceful means and the diplomatic means as much as possible. But whether that's enough to dissuade Iran, I am very skeptical whether that would really work. I think these people are pretty hardcore that we're dealing with, and one thing they do respect is strength.
We're talking to the two of you on Tuesday night, and you're both in Neosho, I think, for the annual, the watermelon feed down there?
That's right.
It's a long-standing tradition.
And it's really hot, too, so the watermelon's going to taste really good.
That sounds great. I want to thank St. Louis area Congressman Todd Akin and former state treasurer Sarah Steelman. Thank you both very much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Steve. It's a pleasure joining you.
Voters head to the polls in Missouri and Kansas next Tuesday. You'll find more information about today's guests, other election 2012 stories, and previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow, an update on HIV and AIDS treatment and prevention. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date. Thank you.